live from a very snowy turnabout in the Colorado Mountains, just north of Sidewinder and down the road from Tony Roberts Feed Store. It's... Wow, that guy had to slow down. He's going to have an accident. It's...
The Dark Multiverse of Stephen... The Dark Multiverse of... The Dark Multiverse of...
Oh, my God. It's the Dark Multiverse of Stephen King, okay?
Now we talk about Elevation.
Elevation.
You know, a few years ago, King, I think it's actually when he did Needful Things, he said this was the last Castle Rock book.
Right.
And, of course, he lied completely.
I love that, though. I mean, yeah. A writer that doesn't lie, come on.
Well, but also, it, so I mean, I would have hated if we'd never gone back to Castle Rock, even if we just moved down the street to Derry. Still.
No,
just,
I want more Castle Rock.
Yeah, and particularly with this TV series, it was really nice to go back here. I will tell you, I just loved this story. What did you think?
I really loved it. It was very short. It's 160 pages. We got the audiobook, which was done by Stephen King himself, so I felt like he was whispering sweet nothings in my ear the whole time.
He's gotten to be a much better reader than he used to be. The first couple times he read his books, they were painful to listen to.
You said that to me, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, no, don't tell me these horrible things. But this one, I wanted to try the audiobook because I just wanted to see. And I said, wait, it's been a couple of years since he's done his last one, Brad. Maybe he's had like some coaching or something like that. And perhaps that was the case because I really enjoyed...
Maybe he just got more comfortable with it. I don't know. But he did a really nice job on this.
So I liked Elevation. I have different feelings about it. On one hand, I think that he's usually better with character development than he was in this. Well, here's the thing. Okay. What I really, really liked about it is I liked that he kind of did his political thing. Right now, I do believe that we're in a place where people could feel like we could band together more and diversity and, you know, we shouldn't be so apart as people, as a country or whatever. And we know that Stephen King is very political with his views. So I did like that the story being about the lesbian couple and the guy who's got this thing going on where he's the weight and the clothes and, you know, he's getting thinner. And so it's the nod to, you know.
Yeah, the whole thinner, lighter thing was really very cool.
And it wasn't a punishment.
No, it was quite the opposite.
That's what made it fun.
It was funny when you read the teaser for this stuff, it did sound like a variant on thinner. But no, it's quite the opposite.
I was thinking it was going to be something like just, you know, kind of horrific. And this was actually kind of wonderful, as you would say. You know, it's I love when you say that. The only thing that I wasn't really a big fan of is I think that he could have made a longer book. And I think that the characters could have been a little bit more developed, a little bit maybe more history. Maybe he could have just thrown an extra 40 pages in there. I just kind of wish he would have done that because although I liked the characters very much and I liked the progression of them between each other and within themselves, I kind of wanted a little more.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I really liked the economy of this story.
I was going to ask what you thought, as a writer, what you thought.
I find, as we've been going along, it's been interesting too, because like, you know, keep saying, I'm rereading some of these books for the first time in decades.
Yeah.
And I'm finding right now that the ones that are the most powerful for me are the shorter books. Pet Sematary.
And Cujo.
And Cujo,
they can
both.
Really gut punch you. Yeah.
Yeah. And partly because they don't go on too long. And I felt very like this was the perfect length. I knew just as much as I needed to know about the couple, about the two of them. I really didn't need more.
It's kind of true that that makes it kind of easy, just like boom, 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 you know.
Is Missy the one that changes? Okay, so is Deirdre's change?
The hard
her evolution from, I don't want anything to do with this guy, to grudgingly accept him, and then finally being his true champion. I thought I really liked that turn. I also liked the fact that King himself kind of brought forward the fact about, look, I'm a white man of privilege. I have no business trying to protect the two poor lesbian women. They can take care of themselves. I mean, he was aware that he's in an awkward position to be talking about that.
I like that that was mentioned as well. So then, you know, nobody can be upset because it's not like he's insulting anybody. Like in, you know, real life, he's not making judgments or assumptions about, you know.
Yeah, or kind of taking on the role as the mansplainer. Like, you know, it needs the man, the white man, to come in and protect the rest of them. No. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Tommy's Holiday Kempa, or in other words, Remember, you're entering the nightmare realm of total spoilers. We talk about the whole of Elevation and Lori here on the Dark Multiverse, so if you haven't already read or listened to the novella and the short story, now would be the perfect time to beat a hasty retreat, do your homework, and return to be entertained and enlightened as always. Otherwise, we're going to totally ruin it for you, because that's our job. Obviously, the brand new story is available all over the place, so no excuses this time, and that being said, we struggle onward.
So what did you think about it? I've been dying to hear it.
What I find most interesting about this story, and I think this is on purpose, by placing it in Castle Rock, this is the absolute opposite of Needful Things. Needful Things is all about people splitting up, hating each other, doing horrible things. It's all about hate and about division to the point that it actually breaks the town. I mean, it actually destroys...
The town implodes and explodes.
And explodes both because of... people just not being able to stand each other, of coming apart, not
the Catholics
together.
And the Christians, and I mean, just everything in Needful Things,
and old friends that could stand each other and all the rest. This is exactly the opposite. And it was a book of its time, just like all books are, and just like all of King's are. And clearly, you're right, his political viewpoints right now, and all of our desperation about how, about where we are right now.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
Yeah, he wanted to write a story about coming together, not falling apart.
Right.
So he puts it in the same place a few years later, and Nick comes close. You know,
it could have, if he wouldn't have helped her up at the end of that race, and someone would have snapped that picture of him smiling down at her, this woman who had been so rough to him, and her wanting to be so proud, but not too proud to accept his hand and help, their friendship would have never been formed.
And Bob Ellis, the old doctor, says as well that what you did for this town, it wasn't just that. It wasn't just the turkey trot.
This is what I
else.
Loved about the book is the ripple effect. I love that. The idea that just by doing one kind act, just in the same way of doing something ugly, it sends ripples out and it can make everything okay. And that we can, as a nation, as well as the people in this Castle Rock town. And I like that you pointed that out. It imploded and exploded, and now you've got it healing and mending in its own little short way, a short little story of like, this is one person's story, another person's story. It all comes together, and it's not a Band-Aid, but more like a kiss from your mom on your boo-boo. You know, it's right. It's making it nice.
And then thinking, too, about the whole thinner aspect is that in that book, of course, he does actually literally fades away. I mean, he gets so thin, there's nothing left, and he dies.
I love the ending in that book, by the way.
It's a great book. But again, here... where we keep thinking something awful is going to happen to this guy.
I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Because he gets lighter and lighter and is just going to blink out of existence. Or the last good thing he did was to help the town accept this couple.
And it wasn't that they were gay that bothered the town. So for anybody that hasn't read it, it was the fact that they were married for some reason that just incensed people. It was just that one extra click and people were so rude.
But the fact that his elevation is literal, that he actually ascends...
I like the ending.
Yeah, the idea that this could be happy, and he was okay with it.
He was totally
was ready to go.
As he got lighter, it was almost like a lightness of spirit within himself. Like he felt like he was elevated as a person, mentally, emotionally, physically, everything. He really felt acceptance about what was happening to him instead of trying to fight against it like the other thinner or anything else. You know, he wasn't trying to fight against this. He was accepting his fate with interest and curiosity, which I personally hope that all...
facing the stars.
And
facing
the stars.
Facing the stars.
And I hope all of us feel that way about death. Whatever your personal beliefs are about the afterlife, whatever your religious or spiritual beliefs or whatever, I hope that all of us can just not even be brave enough, but just be as accepting enough to say, we are all going to die one day. And it's your attitude about it like it is with anything else, you know? Did you live a good life? Did you do the best that you could? And, you know, what's next? And it's kind of a more interest and fascination than something to be dreaded or feared.
Yeah, I think it was a larger commentary for King about the world we live in now.
Oh, for sure.
Than anything else.
Definitely.
And it was kind of nice to see him turn his formidable talents towards telling an uplifting, literally uplifting. The story's just rife with bad puns.
It is, but he did this on purpose. No one can talk about it without using these puns.
story, and I really appreciated that. And as usual, his, to me, deft portrayal of characters that came out just beautifully throughout.
If I look at it your way, of as you said, instead of putting an extra 40 pages in and getting into the characters, just keeping it light and just bouncing along, if you will. Haha, more puns. You can't help it. Oh my God. Just bouncing along with the story. Then I do like that he didn't get into too much detail with the characters. And I also really like that in the beginning, he immediately tells his friend that's a doctor. That was like within the first 6 minutes mm-hmm. of the audiobook. It was like he had told the doctor everything. They were already doing tests and he believed him. There was none of this, let's add more pages and tack more time on by arguing and making proof things. It's like, no, this is what's happening. I don't want to go to the doctor. I don't want to deal with it. I just want to find out, okay, cool, it's happening. And they all become so close. And this is why it was very magical that Brad and I decided to do this one. We didn't even know what it was going to be about it hadn't come out yet when we decided. And it really is a Thanksgiving episode because it's these people giving thanks to each other, for each other, for themselves, appreciation.
And of course, the turkey trot. It does take place
in Thanksgiving. And the turkey trot.
It was weird that it fits so perfectly into this. And King doesn't do holiday stories.
No, this is
very difficult for us.
The ones that he does do are terrible, like the ones that we'll be doing coming up.
Yeah, but it's hard to find that are like that at all. He's never done a Halloween story, for instance.
That's true.
There's a little bit of Halloween in Salem's Lot.
Well, I like that The Shining takes place in October, and I always read it every October.
He's very big on seasons.
Yes, he loves seasons.
Like different seasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does that, but actual holidays, for some reason or other, he's never really done a Christmas story. Per se.
Lies. Know. I will prove you wrong at Christmas, but
all too soon. No, I found it a change, a welcome variation.
I did really enjoy it in that way. This was more like a cartwheel by an author that we know his voice, and then to listen to it in the audiobook, especially. So you're listening, you're reading. It's like the cartwheel of a story of a very good writer, and I enjoyed that. The political stuff, I didn't mind at all. The obvious acceptance of alternative lifestyles, or what were considered alternative lifestyles, that are now just like, you know, everyone has their right and they need to be respected, or at least accepted. If you don't want to be around it, you don't need to make a big stink about it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be negative and hurtful.
That couple was almost driven out of town for something.
It was awful. They were banning the restaurant and, you know, saying we're not going to eat there because, you know, I'm not going to say the words, but just horrible things to be saying about a couple that's a lesbian. It was sad.
All in all, I really did like it. I know that it's gotten mixed reviews. We heard this about the Castle Rock TV series, too. One of the things that people complained about a lot was the pacing and the fact that a lot didn't, quote, happen, that it wasn't a bloodbath from the first scene like it was in, what, Chapter 8, where they finally finally get to see some axe murdering.
Yes.
And it's like, number one, they've forgotten the face of their father here. They don't remember how, as we've seen, the King books tend to build slow, even the short books.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
When we were doing Cujo, half of Cujo, before they get the kid and the woman stuck in the car, half the book gets that way.
Right.
A lot of his books take a long time to build towards the event that we remember the best.
This kind of just got straight to the point, and I do actually like that a lot.
There's no horrific element at all. There's no murders. There's no mobs. There's no nothing bad. There is that really intriguing little bit at the end, because he never does explain why this happened. What happened to the
guy? He just floats away. That's how it ends. I mean, he just floats away.
The idea that it might be another creature, it might be an entity. There's one line towards the end where...
See, I was going to ask you about the ending. Deidre had to help him with something, and I didn't really understand. I was trying to listen to it again.
I think it was the last talk he had with Doc Ellis, too. It was, have you given a thought, what exactly is happening? Because it almost seems to be contagious. Like, he didn't want to get too close to people.
Yes, if he touched people. And it accelerated his own thing.
Yeah.
So
they could touch him for a little bit, but not too long, because he was afraid it would come away. And towards the end, one of the characters asks him, do you think this might be a separate entity that's in you that wants to get back into spirits, wants to get away? He said, I've thought about that. That's possible, too.
Maybe that's why he's feeling these feelings of acceptance and almost excitement towards
exhilaration. And that he's facing the stars.
I was going to ask you what you thought about the ending, because I didn't understand it, but I didn't catch that part, obviously.
You know, so I think a lot of it was he didn't want to explain that this was just a creature that was going to leave his body and get away.
Okay.
This is part of him now, and he's ready for it.
I like that a lot more.
Keep in mind that King himself is 72 years old now. And
Say things like that to me.
I just mean that as you get older, the adjacency of death, people you know are dying,
right?
People, your parents are gone, you're getting to the point where you're thinking about it a lot more. And I wonder if in part this is a narration, as we've often seen with King stuff, where he's talking about what's going on in his head, with his kids growing up, with his own injuries,
his marriage, his addictions, everything else.
That this too is him beginning to think about his own
mortality
and his own passing.
I hope this is how he feels about it, where it's like, what could happen next, you know?
Yeah.
I thought it was super fun, and I thought it was super sweet, and it just made me happy, and it made me feel kind of almost comforted. It made me feel elevated, if you will, you know?
It is a holiday season story. It makes you feel, strangely enough, it's a Stephen King book that makes you feel good.
Yes, a feel-good story by Stephen King. Who would have thunk it? It's like a hug.
Okay, here's what little information you need about Elevation. This new novella was published just before Halloween in 2018, and it's available on Amazon and everywhere else as a standalone hardcover for $12 or as an ebook for $7.99, which is pretty overpriced for a damn novella, but then what isn't these days? If you're a member of Audible, you can listen to King read the story himself over there, free beyond your normal monthly fee, and the audio includes the reading of Laurie, a cool little short story we also talk about here that doesn't seem to be in the print version or in the ebook. Go figure. Anyway, you'll find the links to Amazon in the show notes on our webpage, and you can drop on by www.darkmultipod.com and take a look. Beyond that, we have more to say. And then there's, of course, the tearjerker after that.
With Laurie. I initially had thought maybe it wasn't a separate story. Maybe it was a second part of that story. But then I realized the other characters were different.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
No, it's what I could see. There's no connection between these stories.
No connection.
There's not even any subtle.
But
it's not
Elevation
a Castle Rock.
As
it's
well.
Not.
And, I mean, it really does belong under the title Elevation because you are elevated by the end of that one, too. At least that character
is. He is, yes.
He is elevated by that.
He's
you
redeemed.
Are not. You're curled up in a ball, weeping in your pillow. So, Brad, let me ask you the question that I asked you before from A Good Marriage. Did you cry? Are you a crier?
I got choked up pretty good there years ago. I had a dog that was precious to me. I had him for 17 years.
Aww.
Crypto. Great dog.
Crypto. I remember you talking about Crypto.
A big half-breed, mixed race. That was that was pit bull and hound dog. Great dog.
Aww.
And Crip died 10 years ago, and even now when I'm sitting in a coffee house or whatever and I see a big dumbass brindle go by, I just get choked up. I love that dog so much.
Aww.
So any stories about dogs, I'm
going to give you the biggest hug when we're done recording right now.
And so the idea that he accepted, grudgingly accepted this dog, and then ultimately it redeemed him. It made him a human again.
It did. It brought him back into the world.
He was kind of checked out.
He was super
done.
Checked out. His wife had died, and that's what had happened, right? His wife had died.
Yeah.
And he just didn't want to do anything. He just became this old guy. It's like, get off my lawn, as Brad says all the time.
Yeah, it's like, Brad's not old. Get off my lawn. I should get away. Yeah, it's true.
But I really liked Laurie because the dog is thoughtful. The dog is quiet, for a puppy especially. And the dog ends up saving his ass. And I love that he tries not to project how he feels, like that the dog is thinking things that he's not or whatever.
Yeah,
I thought
it's
that was
very
really cute.
Both realistic and kind of at arm's length.
And
it's
it
not
funny.
About the dog.
It was
it's about
funny.
The man.
Yeah, it's about the man. And it was funny, too, that book that he got, So You Have a Puppy.
So You Have a Puppy or whatever. It was pretty hilarious.
And Stephen King was really good. I loved listening to him read this, and it made me laugh out loud a couple times. And then I did not cry at the end of it, but I did feel the heartstrings pulled for sure. And I was more worried for Don, the guy who got eaten by the alligator. I was more worried about his wife because she was kind of losing it upstairs. And she was like, tell Don to get the damn Christmas decorations up already and, stop farting around. It made me sad that her husband was dead and she's losing it. So it's like, I don't know if she'll be able to find her way to be elevated in the same way that this guy was with Laurie the dog. Oh, and I liked the last part of Laurie where Stephen King dedicates that story to Vixen.
That was the part. That's
is that the
what
part
got
that
me.
Got you?
I was okay with it till the end. I really liked the sudden turn, as usual with King, the sudden turn into violence and weirdness.
Yes.
Which starts when he
goes
to the next door
natural.
Neighbor's.
It was
yeah, but the next door neighbor's house, and she's wacky as mm-hmm. hell. And then the really sudden appearance of the alligator.
Where he had walked the dog the whole time.
Yeah, and I just thought that whole thing was just... And that, you know, he manages to get away by using the cane.
It was scary.
It was a great, well-told story, and it was so surprising.
It was
when
short
that happened,
and quick.
That reveal when he and Rory both see the body. And we see his full acceptance of the character, but then at the end when he says, for Vixen, it's like, oh, my God.
Oh, like, exactly.
That was it for me.
I think that the best part of Lori for me was the one scene, this man who you could tell he had just resigned to being kind of, you know, not present in his life, to see him be elevated by this dog and to watch him come to life as the character. But my favorite parts were how he always referred to Lori as a football, how he held her and things like that. And so when the alligator shows up and he punted her, then she wouldn't leave him.
Up onto the road and wouldn't go any farther.
That was sweet.
It was
a very sweet story.
They both were. And that it was so nice to see a storyteller at the top of his craft still, after all these years and all these books, just give us a couple of stories. They were like Christmas gifts for
me.
They were just wonderful.
These were the best Thanksgiving and Christmas gifts from Stephen King. I'm like, I'm so grateful and thank you.
I don't know how you would make this into any kind of...
I don't think so.
I hope nobody... It doesn't need
you
to be expanded.
You can't touch it, no.
It doesn't just...
Don't touch it. Leave it be.
Yeah, it exists beautifully on paper or...
I think so.
In pixels or... And King's reading is... If you want to do the audiobook...
Right.
It's really nice.
Oh, it really is good. I like it. He doesn't take himself too seriously. There are certain words that he said that I thought were so cute because, you know, I've never really listened to him speak. Certain words that he has a funny way of saying, and it was consistent throughout both books, and I just thought it was totally adorable. I was like,
and he doesn't do voices. He doesn't try to push his own craft too
limits,
hard.
Right.
Like others
or,
would.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that as well. Just he told a story, clearly stories that meant something to him.
I agree. And I wonder how long those were rattling around in the old brain pan before he finally was just like, I need to do this. Or maybe shit's been so bad with our nation that he just was I need to just kind of do something.
I got the sense that was part of the motivation. Again, all of the reverse echoes from Needful Things and from Thinner and all these other things to say, okay, let's do an uplifting story. Let's do a story about coming
and that
together.
And it takes place at Castle Rock.
And put it, which was also fun just to see
all
of the references. It was well worth it.
I thought it was well worth it too.
Yeah.
And I did like it. I just, like I said, initially when we first started talking and I thought, oh, it would have been better. But you're right. It was actually... The pacing of the first one was perfect, and if you would have gotten too into the characters, it would have taken away from the beauty of the story itself and the experience of what was happening. Also, I didn't quite understand the ending, but now that you pointed that part out, I'm like, that's great.
I believe that every story you come up with and one you tell has a natural length. Some of them are meant to be big, thick books. Some are meant to be shorter books. Some are meant
that's
to
a great
be
point.
Short stories. And for me, this felt like this was as long as this story needed to be. Any longer
and it would have been,
it would have been padded any shorter and you would have had a lot of questions just about the story itself. He left a lot of explanations unexplained there at the end, which was fine. But emotionally, I found the story to be very satisfying.
I did too. I did like the way it made me feel. I felt like I was being hugged. I liked it. I really did. And I thought it was super fun and sweet. And then Lori was even sweeter and cutie.
And just one last thing, since we're talking about this, is this week, William Goldman died. Goldman was one of the great screenwriters ever. He wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Love it.
He wrote The Sting. He wrote a number of brilliant screenplays and books. Magic is another one. And a couple of brilliant books about screenwriting and Hollywood, one called Adventures in the Screen Trade, that people still read and teach in class all the time. He hasn't written in the last few years. I think he's been retired, but he's nothing but brilliant as a novelist and as a screenwriter. And among the things he did was the adaptation of Misery. So there's a King
thank
connection.
You, sir.
And just some people just shouldn't ever die, ever stop working. I wish he would have lasted forever.
I know.
So did want to mention was Stan Lee last week.
That was terrible.
It was William Goldman this week, a brilliant writer and worth remembering. So that's Elevation and Lori. Seek out the audiobook and listen. That story is a tiny little gem of its own. It's only 20 minutes long.
It's a little flicker. It's a little flicker,
tiny, but well worth it. And Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. We're thankful for each other. We're thankful for all of you that are listening. And if you don't like us, sit and spin.
Always a good Thanksgiving sentiment.
Yes. That's what we all say around the table, don't you?
Always.
Take that turkey and make it sit and spin. All right, let's do this. So thanks, fist Kat. Your turkeys with care and love each other and be kind.
And thank you, Kat.
Ah, and thank you, Brad.
So let's talk about all the Easter eggs and multiversal references for episode 8 of Castle Rock, Past Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So those nice, normal house hunters, Gordon and Lilith, from a couple of episodes ago, they turn out not to be, surprisingly, not very nice and normal. If Gordon looks familiar to you, it may be because Mark Herlich played God on multiple episodes of Preacher, or because he is Dr. Gabelhauser on Big Bang Theory, has been for a lot of episodes. And his wife Lilith, Lauren Bowles, has done her time in the supernatural as well. She played Holly Cleary in True Blood for a bunch of episodes.
Mm.
You can see them setting up a mannequin to imitate the suicide of Frank Dodd, the Castle Rock strangler from The Dead Zone. And we looked high and low for anything about the 1929 murderer Johnny Carrick, too, but doesn't seem to be anything yet.
We'll see. Now, there was a character named Bruce Carrick in The Dead Zone. He was one of the owners of Cath's Roadhouse. So maybe this was a relative a couple of generations earlier, and he called it the murder capital of 1991, which, of course, would be the year that Matthew Deaver died, Henry Deaver disappeared for a little while, and maybe the burning of Castle Rock and Needful Things. Certainly a big year.
Yeah, we're not quite sure about Needful Things, but something happened.
Mm-hmm.
And note that Gordon and Lilith served their one and only guest strawberry pie, or at least it seems to be, which might be a recipe straight out of Thinner, though they really don't give the couple much time to enjoy it.
And then, of course, there is the act, with a character named Torrance in the room. Are you even surprised it ended up in somebody's skull before the end of the episode with Jackie's help?
Yeah, not a bit. And I know it's not multiversal, but I just love the stupid pun names that they give a bunch of the businesses in Castle Rock.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like a moving company called Out of Dodge, and Jackie's gypsy cab service that she calls Sweet Chariot, as in coming for to carry me home.
You know, a lot of critics of the series have talked about how slow it is. They use words like plotting. That makes no sense at all when you look at an episode like this.
Which opens with slaughter in a bedroom. And
it's such a fun episode. I really enjoyed it. I was like, what in the fuck?
Yeah.
I was really surprised
the last
and happy.
You expected. Yeah. And that's it for what little we have for Chapter 8, Past Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next week with good old episode number 9.
Mm-hmm. Big announcement. Big, big announcement. We are about to have our first contest ever with prizes and everything.
So, we put out a new podcast every Monday, right? And this year it just happens that Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve both fall on a Monday.
Yes. Now, we already know what we're going to do on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it's going to be
great. Oh, Jesus Christ. Brad, shut up for fuck's sake. Okay. Yeah, we know what we're going to do, but we want you, our friends, fiends, listeners, and deranged fans, to give us suggestions on what we should watch and talk about on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
It's entirely up to you.
So look, just drop us a note at darkmultipod@gmail.com or leave us a message on the website, which is www.darkmultipod.com, or just leave us a comment on our Instagram or on Twitter. And any way you want to do it is fine with us. Just make a suggestion, and we'll put you onto the list.
And whoever is the first person to suggest the story that we end up talking about gets a thing from us. Either a book or a DVD from our vast Stephen King collection. Signed by, well, not by King. God, what are we, zillionaires? But by us.
A personalized inscription from me.
And a big-ass lip print from me, because that's how we roll.
So come on, just send us a note. What would you like us to talk about on New Year's Eve? It's all up to you,
mm-hmm.
And there are free gifts involved, so why not? Come on, do it. And
God, that's awful.
That's sorry.
I can't believe we're actually doing this.
It's crazy. But anyway, we're here in Kat's kitchen. This is our first ever cooking segment of the Dark Multiverse of Stephen King, which is brought to you by Red Apron, the make-your-own-meal delivery service that brings the best of multiverse cuisine directly to you.
Which is exactly what we're doing, making our own meal right from Red Apron.
Yeah.
Seems like the perfect thing to do for our Thanksgiving podcast.
It is.
They sent us this nice big box.
Here, let me get...
Got
oh, man. That thing is heavy.
And I wonder why they sent it in an unmarked box
this.
Even my stuff from Adam and Eve has a return address.
Mine too. And just so everybody knows, Kat and I are both pretty decent cooks already. But you don't have to have any experience when it comes to Red Apron. Just a sharp knife, a good attitude, and a crazed glint in your eye, and you're ready to rip into Red Apron.
Okay, so let's do that. Here's the big plastic bag that they sent. Oh, is that moving?
Yeah, move back. Jeez.
Ah, kill it, kill it.
My God, what?
Is that, oh God, Brad, is that an eye?
I don't know, but that is definitely a finger.
I think we should just pass on the main course here.
Yeah, let's, wow. But here, I brought a backup, just in case. Here, wait, here's another box, wait. Look. These are some of Stephen King's favorite foods.
For reals, Brad.
No, really, really. I looked this up online and everything. He actually published recipes a few years ago. He had an article in Bon Appetit and everything. It's the Wendy Torrance special tomato soup, for starters. Then his own recipe for baked salmon with a brown sugar glaze. And look, another recipe for his own cranberry orange cheesecake. And he even makes a side of jambalaya rice.
Oh, wait. Jambalaya rice?
Yeah.
That was a Red Apron package, too.
Oh, no. What, the one we just threw out? Okay, let's get this back. Okay, okay.
Okay, so another plastic bag. I can see some rice in there and some spices and... Okay, wait.
Those are either very small beetles or really big maggots.
God, look at them squirm.
Don't open them.
Yeah, no, never. Ugh.
Let's just go straight to the salmon, shall we?
Good idea, salmon. I'll get out the butter and the brown sugar and lemon and... Wait. Let me set the oven for 350 and get it all preheated.
Here, wait a minute.
Brad, what in the hell?
I went to the fishmonger in Derry and I said I wanted the freshest fish that he had. And this is what he gave me.
Brad, wait.
Absolutely fresh?
Brad, don't. Oh, God, Brad.
Oh, what? God, what is that? Ah.
Brad, kill it. Kill it. Kill it.
This isn't going at all like I planned.
No, you know what? Why don't we take a break from the cooking?
That's a good idea.
And I'll make us a drink. Look. The last thing from the Red Apron package, and I'm quoting here, special libation from Lloyd, the legendary mostly dead bartender at the Overlook Hotel for a flaming Lamborghini.
What?
No, it's okay. I've totally made these before. I'm a professional, remember?
How could I ever forget?
I've got everything we need to do this. Just wait a second.
And while Kat is getting all her liquor and glassware together, let me tell you, no kidding, that we're going to put the actual real recipes for Stephen King's favorite foods, like the brown sugar glazed baked salmon and the cranberry orange cheesecake and the tomato soup, on the website, as well as on redapron.co. So you can look at the links there and find some really cool things that you want to...
Okay, here.
What?
Ready to go. Okay. So... You start with a martini glass.
Mm-hmm.
Pour one shot of Bailey's Irish Cream down one side of the glass.
Yeah.
And a shot of Blue Curacao down the other side of the glass. Then look, see how it layers? Put a couple of bar spoons on top of the martini glass for support. Then a wine glass upside down. And balance a brandy snifter upside down on top of that. And then you take a shot glass and you put it upside down on top of that.
This looks incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, well, leave this to the trained professionals. Do not try this at home. Anyways, I take the Sambuca and I pour just a little bit into the bottom of the shot glass, which is now on the very, very top.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
got that little well.
Yeah, I see it.
And then see here, you take an ounce of Kahlua. So you've got this on the side. Then I use my little candle lighter here to set up fire to the Sambuca in the top.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah. And then they pour the fluid down from the top so it all kind of
cascades. Look out, that thing in the trash, it's still moving.
Oh God!
Ah! Get back! There's a fire! Get out!
Wait, the curtains! Oh shit, look out!
Run! Just run. We'll call 911 from outside. Through the door. Wait, down here.
It's following us!
Everywhere!
Don't let the Chia Pet Topiary animals in the bay window catch fire!
Oh, don't worry, they're already running. They'll be fine.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. I guess we'd like to thank Red Apron for sponsoring this edition of the Dark Multiverse.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. You know what, Brad? I don't know if Red Apron actually likes us very much.
And that about covers it for Elevation and Lori. We weren't kidding about the contest to decide what we babble about on New Year's Eve, so be sure to get your suggestions in, as well as any comments or critiques of the cast in general that you'd like to leave. Just visit us at www.darkmultipod.com, where you can leave a message, or join us on Twitter, where we lurk as @darkmultipod, or on Instagram, where we also lurk as @darkmultipod, or use the all-too-common email address of darkmultipod@gmail.com. We're so easy to find, it's ridiculous. Just like every other week, our beautiful theme and bed music is from the amazing artist, composer, violinist, and ukuleleist, if that's a word, and podcaster, Chrysanthi Tan. You can support her, as you should, over on Patreon at www.patreon.com/chrysanthitan, or by visiting her website at www.chrysanthitan.com. If you're having trouble with the name, think of it as a beautiful but motherless chrysanthemum. Or just Google her. She's as easy to find as we are. We're happy to report that we're growing in spite of all our best efforts. Every episode is getting more downloads and listens than the one before it, and we'd love to keep that going. So do us a big favor and go on over to iTunes to like, rate, and review us. It helps with their algorithms and databases and stuff. And talk endlessly about how truly adorable we are on your own social media and to your friends and your family and total strangers. And if you've already done that, thank you so much. And now go do it again. And meanwhile, from the bottoms of our tiny little digital hearts, have a happy Thanksgiving with your friends and family and the people you care about most. And we'll catch you again next week.
I was asking if you wanted to take a picture of me or anything like that. Okay. Be like, woo, I got my...
You are beautiful, as usual.
No, but I love these. My grandma bought this for me. And I'm like, it comes with a little purple shirt. And I'm like, I just think it's so cute. I'm the queen of the world.
Well, you are queen of the world. That's true. Thank you.